Hello and welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 26. I'm Pam, and with me as always is Riley.
Hello.
How you doing, Riley?
I'm good. So we're recording on a Thursday because I'm going away this weekend, so it's technically my Friday, so I don't have to go to work tomorrow.
Oh, that's nice. Did you take it off because you're going away, or did you just...
Yeah. I have to catch a train at like 2:30, so...
Huh. Yeah. Well, that's good that you had some time off.
Mm-hmm. I need it.
So it's just going to be the two of us this week. We got some stuff to talk about, what we've been up to, and then we got a whole bunch of listener questions. Mm-hmm. So, Riley, what have you been up to since we last recorded?
A few things. I saw the new Wolverine movie, and I guess it's not Wolverine, it's Logan.
Mm-hmm. How was that?
It was good. I feel like I need to watch it again to really, like, catch everything.
Oh.
Like, I went in kind of, like, not really expecting a lot, and I feel like I got a little more than that. Mm-hmm. Mostly because I don't really, like, keep up with X-Men stuff, and I had, like, no idea, like, the comic that this was based off of, and, you know, like, the most that I know of X-Men is, like, from all of the X-Men movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It was really violent, which it's rated R, I think, so.
Oh, okay.
To be expected. But, like, there were, like, a bunch of fight scenes where, like, I had to look away because it was, so extreme. The little girl that's in the movie, I think I preferred her character over Wolverine, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
Like, she was, like, super badass. Like, just like he is, but, like, I don't know. It was really cool seeing, like, this tiny, tiny girl, like, do the same things that he's doing.
Mm-hmm. She's X-23?
I think so, yeah. Okay. The whole, like, premise of it being, like, in the future and mutants being, like, they have to, like, kind of hide from people because they're being, like, hunted and they're kind of, like, outcasts. I don't know. I don't know if I liked that part of it. I don't know. I'm like, 50-50 on liking it and not, you know, just being kind of like, meh, meh. But I don't know. And then... for kind of a different experience, I went to see the Game of Thrones, like, orchestra music, like, live.
Oh, nice.
At the Air Canada Centre here. That was awesome.
Yeah, that sounds good. I had no idea that was here.
Yeah, I guess they're traveling around with the actual composer. And he is directing he had, like, he said it was a Toronto/Montreal, like, group of people in the orchestra that he had.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of, like, travels around with a set group of people. And I think it's, like, one of them is a woman that does most of the singing. There's a cellist that he travels around with and someone that plays the violin. Someone that plays, like, the weird, like, horns and stuff. Like, weird, like, pan flutes and stuff. And that guy played, like... all of the kind of the weird sounds that you hear.
Mm-hmm.
So he travels around with, like, a bass group of, like, 5 or 6 people and then, like, hires local, like, symphony orchestra folks to do, like, the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was so good. They kind of, like, went through each house's theme and not each character's theme, but they did play arias.
Oh, yeah.
With the... Hammer Dulcimer, I think it was called. It's like this, it looks like it opens up from a suitcase and you can, like, set it out and then you play it with, like, little mallets almost. Yeah, it was really cool. And then, like, people were, like, making jokes about like Reigns of Castamere, and the the composer was even like, okay, so now that we've played the Reigns of Castamere, like, you know what's next. The doors are all locked. And then they played, like, the theme that plays while the Red Wedding is happening.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, no. But it was like, it was really cool, like hearing all of that music live.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. I would go again even if they came back. And then I've been keeping up with the 100, and like, I'm getting really disappointed with that show.
Yeah, I just got caught up yesterday, so man. I think I'm caught up. I found the first couple episodes this season really boring.
Yeah.
And then things finally started happening, but it's still just like...
But like, it's in like, a shitty way.
Yeah, and it's just like too much. Like, there's already all this shitty thing that's going on, and then it's just like, let's just add on some more. Let's, you know, burn some stuff down. And like,
yeah. Yeah. I feel like I can kind of see where they're going with everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want them to. I wish it was like... Ugh. Gosh. I almost wish it ended with the last season.
Yeah.
You know? Where, like, everything kind of seemed resolved, but then they didn't add on that...
The nuclear thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That they just didn't add that on.
Yeah.
And then it could have just ended and everybody would have been safe and okay.
Yeah.
But no. So, yeah. I don't know. It's... I wish it was better than it was. I'm not going to stop watching it because I like to hate watch things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I want to, like, smack them and just be like, get along.
Yeah.
Please. You're all going to die. Gosh. Ugh. And then, apart from watching stuff on YouTube, I found another YouTube channel that I like. And it's called Two Hearts, One Soul, but it's Soul like Seoul, South Korea. And it's a Canadian woman and her husband. She's from Halifax and he is from Seoul, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like he's lived everywhere. And they like do vlogs and stuff about visiting places in Seoul and like kind of all around Korea. And they're so cute. And like her, since she's Canadian, I'm kind of like feeling a little more like of a connection with her, like kind of being out of place and like learning how to navigate like social customs and stuff like that. So it's really kind of cool. They do like a bunch of Q&A videos and stuff talking about like their life in Korea. And like eventually it sounds like they're planning on moving to Canada and then maybe back to Korea. They've got like this huge like plan of places they want to live, so
that's cool.
Yeah, it's a really neat channel. They like go to all these different places and like places that don't seem super touristy, so that's kind of neat. And then the Movies with Mikey channel that Mikey Newman does, he recently did an episode on Princess Mononoke, which is my favorite Studio Ghibli film, so I was really excited to see him do like a kind of analysis video on it. And I thought it was kind of interesting because he didn't super go like into detail on like characters when a lot of people like really really focus like on the characters when they talk about this movie, but he kind of focused on more of the themes and why the characters kind of end up the way that they do and why their motivations are or how they're presented in the movie. And it was so good. I don't know. And it, like all of the movie analysis that he does is always really good. The best one I think he's ever done is The Iron Giant. So if you haven't watched that, I would say go check it out. Because it was like that one actually like made me cry. Because it was so like it was just so poignant and emotional, and he made like all these really excellent points about the movie. And it came out at a time where it was like I think the election was happening in the States, so it was kind of like, you know, be nicer to each other.
Yeah.
It was like the key point of it in the end. But yeah, the Mononoke one was really good. And then I started reading a book called The Vegetarian, which is about back in my K corner again.
Yeah.
it's about a woman who ends up going eating vegetarian in Korea, and Korea is like a very like social meal place, and a lot of it revolves around like around meat. So it's really heavy so far. She, like, her family basically like disowned her in the first chapter. So it's really, really I wouldn't say like gruesome, but it's really, really dark already. So I'm, I don't know, reading it kind of slowly because it's a lot to kind of take in at first. But it's cool seeing like the social differences, and I find like eating, and particularly like social norms in eating, is really interesting to read about, especially in other countries. Even here, a little bit, eating differently. Like I can't eat like any gluten, so no like like traditional like bread and pasta and stuff like that. So I have to, like, it's easier now to eat that way, but like you have to, I have to avoid a lot of stuff. And like my brother is vegan, so he has to avoid a lot of things, and it's difficult because you feel like you're on the outside. So I can't even imagine trying to be vegetarian in a society where like social eating and group eating in meals together and having like meat at a table all together is such a huge thing. And being like, no, I'm not doing that anymore, and then having people basically say, well, you're not my daughter anymore, see ya. Like,
yeah, for it to be that important.
Yeah. So it's a lot. The book is like a lot to take in, but so far I'm enjoying it, and I'm hoping it's not like, I feel like it's going to be like the same kind of tone all the way throughout. So maybe I'll just read it really slow and take my time with it. Cause yeah, I had to set it down after reading like a passage, and I was like, I can't. But yeah. So I'm going to take it on the train. I'm going to read it on the train this weekend.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, so that's what I've been up to. What about you?
I've played a few games. I played this one called Beholder, and it's like a simulation game, and you play a landlord of an apartment building in this totalitarian state, and you have to like spy on your tenants and report them if they do anything illegal, if they have anything illegal. And it's very reminiscent of Papers, Please.
Oh, yeah.
So like you need to make decisions, like you can help the people who are, you know, being unfairly persecuted, but it could impact your ability to earn money and like support your own family. So you have to make those kind of tough decisions. It was quite a difficult game. I ended up going through it on the easy mode because I was just having too much trouble, and I can't be a jerk in games. Like people would be like, oh, you have to evict these people from your apartment, and rather than just, you know, kick them out, I had to like help them get out of the country.
Oh my gosh.
So I always needed to like do the right thing, so I had to play on easy so that I could do that without losing.
Oh my gosh.
I also played Frog Fractions, the latest NoClip documentary, which is the series by Danny O'Dwyer, is on Frog Fractions. So I had tried to play it before, and I had gotten bored and stopped. Now, everything I've ever read about Frog Fractions is like, don't tell anyone anything about it. Just let them play it and discover it for themselves, which is like, I don't really agree with that. So maybe it's just because I don't like it. But I'm gonna tell what Frog Fractions is about. It's old. It's like this flash game masquerading as an educational game to teach you fractions. And you play this frog, and you're just like shooting your tongue out and catching flies and getting points. And then after a certain amount of points, you buy a bunch of upgrades, and then you get a dragon and you blast off into space, and it becomes like this weird thing. It's trying to be subversive, but it's just like a really bad example of meme culture and nostalgia culture just sort of like run amok. Like there's callbacks to Zork, so there's like this whole text adventure sequence, there's a DDR sequence, there's a adventure game sequence. I don't know if it's supposed to be like that that attorney game, Ace Attorney or something. And there's even a part where you become the president, and then it does like a West Wing like theme song, and it's just sort of goes all over the place. I didn't find it to be a good game, so so I didn't end up, I watched the first documentary on it, but just I guess because I wasn't really that interested, I skipped the second one on Frog Fractions 2, even though there was this huge big alternate reality game to give people access to Frog Fractions 2, which I thought was pretty interesting, but I don't want to play the game.
No thanks.
Yeah. And then the last game I played was Sherlock Holmes, The Devil's Daughter. And it was okay. I really like the Sherlock games. They've got some good puzzles in them. But this one made some bad decisions. They added some sequences like stealthy things and like having to tail someone, which felt kind of like an Assassin's Creed game, as you're like going over rooftops and things. Mm-hmm. And there's a lawn bowling sequence, which is excruciating and long. So it was like mostly good, but they just added in these sequences where it's like, why would you add this to a Sherlock Holmes game? Like, it tried to either make it into an action game or a lawn bowling game.
Lawn bowling.
Yeah, and I wanted to get all the achievements, and there's like an achievement for getting all the achievements, and the last achievement I needed was to win the game of lawn bowling, so I needed to do it like four times. Oh my God. I also watched a movie called I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore. It's another Netflix original movie.
Netflix.
Yeah. They're on a roll. It stars Melanie Lynskey and Elijah Wood. And it's about this woman who's like depressed, and she's sort of used to getting like walked over and taken advantage of in her life. And then her house gets robbed and someone steals her grandmother's silverware, and she decides she's had enough. And so her and her weird neighbor, who is Elijah Wood, team up to like take back what's hers. And then it turns into like this dark comedy crime movie. It actually reminded me in tone a lot of Girlfriend's Day that I watched.
Yeah, you mentioned that before.
A little while back. But it was good. I liked it.
Sweet. And it's on Netflix, so it's easy to access.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, I had heard about it on the Lady Problems podcast. They had Melanie Lynskey on it and talking about
Lady
it.
Problems?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard of that podcast before.
Yeah, it's all about how women are treated in the media. So
that's great.
Yeah, it's a good podcast. And then lastly, I finished watching Sopranos. Have you watched Sopranos?
No, I have not.
Do you mind if I ruin it?
I feel like I know, like, okay. The ending anyway.
Yeah.
The ending especially, I think I know.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to talk about that if any listeners have not heard about it somehow. well, tough.
Tough for you.
So I finished watching it, and I remember watching it live and how much controversy it caused, because the last scene of the show, Tony's in a diner with his family, and you see people coming into the diner. There's this one guy who looks like he might be trouble, like he could possibly be someone out to like kill Tony. And the very last scene, the door to the diner opens. He hears this little bell ring. He looks up, and then everything just goes black. It just cuts out and goes silent for like 10 seconds before the end credits come on. So people were very upset that it was sort of this, it was an ambiguous ending. You didn't know exactly what happened. So I've just been sort of reading all the discussion that was generated back then. And then there's even been new discussion and articles written about it, or at least in the last couple years. So there was this article I read with David Chase, who was the creator and director of that episode, and he went over sort of shot by shot how he planned it. Don't Stop Believing is playing on the jukebox during that scene, and how he did everything to like line up with the song. I just think it's pretty interesting. I'm one of the ones who thinks that Tony didn't die, even though there is a lot of evidence to the contrary. But I feel like the whole last season was just about building a sense of dread and a sense of things coming to an end, whether that was like Tony's life or the way of life in the mafia or the show. So I feel like at the end, it didn't really matter whether Tony died right there or if he got indicted the next day or if he, you know, died of something in a year. It was just like, that's where it got cut off for the audience. So yeah, there's so much discussion about it. There's this whole like blog post about it. It's got to be thousands and thousands of words and like just screenshots and just about how
camera angle analyses and
camera angle analyses. Yeah, because he does some really cool things with the shots and the editing. It like does this thing where it shows Tony and then it shows where Tony's looking. And so like there's this one really weird shot when he first walks into the diner and you see him walk in and then you see from his point of view and then you see him in the booth. So it's almost like he's seeing himself in the booth, and it's really weird. But yeah, so it's caused lots of controversy. But the creator still is like, nope, there's no definitive answer. It just ended. Sorry.
And I'm the person that made it, so
yep.
That's the real answer.
Exactly.
I feel like the only things that I've heard about Sopranos is how like divisive the last episode is.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't, like, I've heard that it's good. That's what I've heard, basically. But like then the end of it, people it just exploded.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, because I watched it with Will, and it was his first time watching the show. And even like at the beginning of the scene, I was like, you're going to be angry. And then it ends. And he's like, what? That's how it ends? So, yeah, he was angry.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like maybe I should watch The Sopranos.
It's really good. Like, it's also quite violent, and yeah, the people in it are shitty people, but it's good. It's very well done, and there's so many good quotes and good scenes, and yeah, it's pretty funny, too. All right, so that's all for what I've been up to in the last little while. So now we can move on to our listener questions.
Yay!
Thank you, everyone, for
sending
them in. You guys really came through. All right, so the first question is, did you sign up for EA Access to play Andromeda early? From Workshop.
Yep. I actually was playing it right before we were recording.
Mm-hmm. And get dragged away.
Yeah, I was just telling, before we started recording, I was telling Pam about the character creator and how I don't think it's as good as Dragon Age Inquisition's character creator.
Yeah.
That's just not, I don't know, maybe I'm going to go back and look at it after we're done. But like, I found like all the customization options that were in Inquisition, and yes, I know it's two different teams working on it, whatever, but like it feels like all of the customization options that you had to change like basically everything about your character's face, it's like I would say you get like maybe a third of that in the Mass Effect creator, and you, the way that I, at least I think it works, maybe I'll like come back and edit myself if I prove myself wrong later, but like it looked like the only way to change your facial features, like your eye shape and your eyebrows and your nose and your mouth, was to pick like a corresponding head that you like and then use those features as a base to kind of like move the sliders around to adjust it the way that you want. But like, you can't change the shape of the eye once you pick it. Like, then you have to go back and pick another base head if you don't like that eye shape, or like you don't like the eyebrows, then you have to go back and pick the head that has the eyebrows you like. So I don't know. I'm going to fiddle around with it tonight. But I don't know. I wasn't super impressed with the character creator. However, when I started the game, I got chills. And then like some more like music came on in the background as I was like making the character, and like I looked over at my boyfriend and I was like, I'm gonna cry. So like I, you know, with all of the, and like people are, you know, saying shit about the animations and stuff like that, and wow, there's a lot of problems, it looks like. But like, you know, it's Mass Effect, so I'm gonna love it anyway.
Yeah, I've been kind of worried about all the things coming out. I've seen some not, like, Rock, Paper, Shotgun had, like, a scathing review of the first 5 hours or whatever they were allowed to talk about. Also, I don't think they've done themselves any favors with the way that they're doing this. Like, I did not sign up for EA Access, so I'm just waiting for Tuesday to play it. But is it just, like, can you play all of it or can you just play part of it?
No, it looks like you get 10 hours. So, like, I mean, however long. But then I think I saw someone say, or maybe my boyfriend told me, but you can play up to a certain point. Okay. So, like, I couldn't use my 10 hours and, like, blast through, you know, so much of the story. Because I think, like, if they did that, then there would be people, like, there'd be, you know, like, spoiler stuff everywhere if people were, like, able to play the full game now. Like, people would have beaten it by Tuesday for sure. Like, I think Mass Effect 3 I played in, like, 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
Like, one sitting. Oh, I can't believe I just admitted that.
That's okay. It happens. So I'm hoping, I mean, because I've seen some better sort of previews of it as well, but I just think that telling the journalists, like giving them the game, but then saying you can only talk about the first 5 hours of the game, that's not good. Because in a big RPG, like imagine 5 hours of Dragon Age Inquisition. Like, what are you gonna get? Like, how well do you get to know the characters in 5 hours? How much do you learn about the story in 5 hours?
You get stuck in the hinterlands.
Yeah, you just get stuck in the hinterlands, and then that's all you think about. All the stupid elf root or whatever it is that you have to pick.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like the way this launch is going. I guess maybe. Is the best way to put it. Like, because, I don't know, like, I appreciate being able to, like, play around with the character creator and, like, maybe do, like, the first mission or whatever, but, like, I don't like that people have to sign up for freaking, Origins garbage service to be able to play. So, yeah, I did sign up for EA Access, but I don't like that I did.
Yeah.
Okay, the next question comes from, is this Estelia's Lair? Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm going to do that. Estelia's Lair. Do you think BioWare will ever allow players to romance all of their Mass Effect squad mates regardless of gender?
I kind of think no. Because it seems like something where they very intentionally create characters, and the characters' sexuality is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really think so. I think there's something to be said for like player sexual characters. In as the player who wants to kiss everyone, I like that. But you know, I can understand from a real like writing and characterization point having them have preferences like anyone would.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I don't think they will do that. And I think the closest maybe they ever got to doing something like that would be Dragon Age 2. It's like, I mean, it's most of them. It's not all of them for sure. But like most of them seem like they're player sexual. So if you like flirt with any of them, I think the only person that won't is Aveline and Sebastian if you're a male hawk. But like, yeah, Dragon Age 2 is like, I've seen people refer to it as the game where everyone is bi.
Yeah.
It's pretty close. But I don't think, for some reason, I don't think the Mass Effect team would do that. Maybe the Dragon Age team would with their characters at some point, but I don't know. I think they've created really good stories around characters that have a sexuality that maybe isn't compatible with the player character's sexuality. Like Dorian, for example.
Yeah.
He's the main one. I mean, but then you run into issues with characters like Sarah, where she's the only, and I'm not talking about Mass Effect anymore, sorry. She's the only, lesbian character, but she's not, like, a lot of people don't like her. She's, like, to me, she seems like a really mean character, so... Mm-hmm. I wouldn't romance her with my Lady Inquisitor. Yeah, so I don't know. Dragon Age kind of fricked up with that. Yeah, I've had this conversation with a lot of people, especially like with the week running up to this one where the characters have been revealed and some of the romance routes have been data mined. So I know, what characters... I know I didn't mean to say it that way. But like I know the romance routes only because I went and I looked for them, and there are actually some surprising ones, so I'm interested to see if those actually pan out and are like were data mined properly, because that'll be interesting. But yeah, swing back to the question, no, I don't think BioWare will ever let players romance all of the squad mates. It'd be nice, but I don't think they will.
All right. The next question is from AC Decepticon. What is the biggest regret you have in terms of missing out on something, video game related or otherwise?
For me, the first thing that comes to mind is missing BlizzCon. mostly because my entire timeline, like Twitter timeline, seems to be talking about it when it gets announced and when it's happening, and a lot of people that I know on Twitter I met through Blizzard games, so it's always hard when everybody else is going and seeing all the cool Blizzard stuff and I'm not going. So that's a big one for me.
I was trying to think of something, and I think mine isn't about missing, more about a game causing me to miss things, which is World of Warcraft. Oh. See, I mean, there's obviously good and bad things, because it gave me a lot of things, but I don't know, in that 9 years or whatever... you know, I was playing other games during that time, but just like thinking about all the time and energy I spent on it and how I could be playing other things or like enriching my life in some other way. But
I understand that for sure. Ugh, man. Yeah, I don't want to even think about how many hours of raiding I have done in my life. Like, mm-hmm. I really don't. That's not something I ever want to know.
Ugh. I know. There was years there where when I was raiding with that guild, it was like half North America, half Australia. And it was like every Friday and Saturday night from like 9 p.m. until 2 a.m. So I like, and that was like when I was in my mid-20s, like early mid-20s. Yeah. And I just like was at home on my computer every night.
Ugh. More Warcraft.
Yeah.
Ugh. Gosh. Let's see. Okay. AC Decepticon has another question, which should turn around from being depressing. what is the best purchase you have ever made that's video game related?
I was also having some trouble with this because I know AC Decepticon is like a big bargain hunter in terms of games and things. So my stuff isn't like that. But I'd say this wasn't a purchase that I, like, it wasn't something I purchased, but it was something I asked my mom to purchase. Uh-huh. And that was the LucasArts Classic Adventures box set, which I think I got when I was, I don't know, 10 or 11 or something. And it came with 5 LucasArts point-and-click adventures that included Monkey Island and Loom and Maniac Mansion. And it was a good purchase, just in the case that it had 5 awesome games in it, and it really got me into adventure games and PC games in general.
Yeah, I was trying to think of, like, what I bought that I've either, like, maybe had a long time or that I got a lot of use out of. Okay, maybe I have 2 things then. So the first thing is my Mass Effect N7 sweater.
Oh.
And, like, I think that's also, like, one of the first... We've had a question that's similar, or that I'm giving a similar answer for, because it's, like, the first thing that I've worn, or that I wore that is, like, video game clothing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that sweater, like, I've had that sweater, it's got to be at least 6 or 7 years. And like every time I wear it out somewhere, like somebody will notice it, or somebody will, like, you know, say like the shepherd and then respond with like Rex, because it's like the classic line that everybody says when they see like Commander Shepherd. You just want to say like Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And then something else that's video game related, but I bought it because I didn't have a good headset at the time, is my SteelSeries pink headset that I've definitely had for like at least, it's got to be like 10 years now, and I've had them for so long. Yeah, I mean, I can't really like in terms of like video games, I have no idea. Like actual games themselves, I don't know. I mean, you know, we've been talking about Mass Effect. Mass Effect in particular has, like, definitely given me, like, the best bang for my buck, because I played it, like, over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And it's also, like, one of those games where I think I haven't written fan fiction about Mass Effect, but I've definitely read a bunch of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's done, like, other things. Like, it's not... like, different value, I guess. Like, more emotional value for Mass Effect anyway. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
So next is another question from Orkchop. Do you prefer digital or physical editions of new games?
I used to prefer physical editions of new games, but... now, to save space, I am happier getting the digital one.
For me, it depends. I mean, I like to have physical editions of games that I really like.
Mm.
Of course, you don't know if with a new game whether you're really going to like it or not. Also, if it's something I think I might not like, then physical, because I can trade it in or return it. Whereas digital, I mean, you can on Steam, but I don't think you can on console. So I'm sort of good either way. I'm fine with games that are only digital, but I still buy a fair amount of physical.
Yeah. It's kind of like books, where it's nice to have, like, the physical thing and, like, flip through the pages and stuff, but then, like, the convenience of buying it on, like, a Kindle, for example.
Hmm.
Let's see. The next question is another one from Estelia's Lair. Do you ever do your makeup in a way that references video games and or other fandoms? For example, an N7-inspired color palette.
I don't, but that's a really good idea.
Yeah. I don't think I ever have. I've done... So the only... Oh, this is a good time to say how good one of our friends on Twitter, her makeup, like, cosmetics shop is.
oh, yeah, that's good.
Aerolade. She does Dragonsworn cosmetics. And she makes all sorts of, like, geeky cosmetic stuff. So, like, nail polish, lip gloss.
Yeah.
Eyeshadows.
Actually... I completely forgot about that because I have a bunch of her makeup, so I guess I have, yes.
That's funny. Like, yeah, because you have some eyeshadow from her, right?
Yeah, she sent me an Alistair eyeshadow as a sample when I ordered some stuff. But yeah, I've got a Shepherd lip gloss. I've got a Yuna lip gloss from Final Fantasy X. I've got a Morrigan lip gloss, and then I also have a bunch of nail polish, including one that she custom made for me, which is an Ori nail polish. So it's like glow in the dark whitish with blue and purple sparkles.
Sounds really pretty. Yeah, she sent me the Tracer nail polish,
Oh, nice.
And I think Alistair lip gloss, and then she's doing like body butter, so she sent me Cullen body butter and Alistair body butter.
Nice.
And so she's like to test because she was like making the formula or whatever. Yeah, they smell amazing. Yeah, I've never, like, I haven't purposely done something like that with my makeup, but I do wear things that are like inspired by them in a way, but not like, I'm not like, you know, putting like, I don't know, red and like darker red on my eyelids and being like, I'm doing Mass Effect today. Mostly because I don't have enough makeup to do that. My eyeshadows are like one color and that's it. So, no, I do not.
All right. We've got another question from Orkchop. Do you main in Overwatch or do you rotate around?
I don't main like one particular character. I kind of like stick to like five sort of main ones. Like I play a lot of, if I have to play a tank, I'll probably play Zarya. If I have to play a healer, I'll play Mercy or Ana. If I have to play a DPS, I'll play Pharah or Tracer. And that's pretty much it. I don't really, like, goof around or play with any of the other characters. Oh, I do play a lot of Torbjorn, too.
Yeah. I guess I'd say that Mercy is my main in terms of hours played. Mm. I do play other things. I think this season my second most is Reinhardt. Generally, I play support, everyone but Lucio. Reinhardt, I'll play Zarya. I'm not very good at DPS, but I play Mei, actually. Mei actually had my best win rate in competitive last season with Mei, even though I didn't play as much as Mercy. And this season, I've won, like, one game as Mei and lost a lot. I don't know what happened this season. Although, since we are on Overwatch, I got to Platinum this season.
Yay!
Yeah, I... it felt like karma because I had all these really bad matches. My placement matches were fine. I got to like 2250 in placements, and then just like terrible, terrible matches. And then one day I had this team and we're all communicating and we're all working well and we won and we decided all six of us were like, okay, well, let's stay in queue together. And usually what happens is that then you go up against another six queue and you lose. But in this time we like won five games in a row. And then two people dropped off and the four of us won another two games in a row. And then everyone else left and I won another two games by myself. So I like shot up like 400 points to like 2650 or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like magical.
Yeah. It was really nice. It was like by the end of it, I think my last win, I won 70 points.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Whoa. Nice. Okay. The next question is from a Latino lawyer. And he asks, lonely, loved, and lethargic, what games do you play when you're feeling each of these feelings?
Diego always has such in-depth questions. For the first one, lonely, when I do something, like, if I'm lonely or sad, I don't go for the happy thing. I go for the thing that's going to make me more sad.
Yeah, yep.
So for lonely, I play something that will, you know, emotionally destroy me, like The Walking Dead season one, Telltale, that's one, or you know, whatever the new sad introspective indie game is. What about you for lonely?
Lonely, yeah, I do the same kind of thing where if I'm feeling sad, the next best thing that I want to feel is more sad. So I would say I usually go with games that I can play on my own, where like nobody else is going to be around. The Walking Dead, that's a good one. I would say like the beginning of Ori and the Blind Forest. Yeah. I would probably play that and then get like super pissed off later at the mechanics of the game, even though they're very good, so you know, whatever. But like the beginning of that is just like so heart-wrenching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say Ori for lonely.
For loved, I go the opposite way. If I'm like already feeling good, I play something else that, you know, make me feel more good. So things that are sort of upbeat, like Rayman. I've been playing a lot of Rayman lately. You know, sort of fun, happy platformers that are cute.
Yeah. For that, I think I would probably go with more like multiplayer stuff. So I would say, yeah, if I'm feeling pretty good and like feeling loved, then I would actually probably log on to Overwatch. Mostly because that's a game that I play with my partner, so
mm-hmm.
It used to be World of Warcraft, but it's not that anymore. Warcraft probably would have been a big one, like, if this question had been asked of me, like, 6 years ago, because that's how I met my boyfriend, and so that's how we would talk to each other for the most part, because mm-hmm. we were both always on World of Warcraft, because we're losers.
We're all losers.
Yeah, definitely some kind of, like, multiplayer game where, like, you know, I can hang out with my friends and be around all the people that I play with online normally.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what I'd go for.
So for lethargic, I will fall back on an old favorite. The one I thought of was XCOM or XCOM 2. It's something I can sink a lot of hours into and something I'm very familiar with. And also, very importantly, something that doesn't require constant attention because it's turn-based and there's no, like, twitch reactions, no, like, time-based things. So I can just play if I feel like just like putting the controller down and wandering off. I can do that.
Yeah, that's a good one. For me, if I'm feeling lethargic, okay, so I saw people talking about this on Twitter when this question was asked that I would say Mass Effect for one of these answers, and this is where I'm going to say that answer. But it wouldn't be the new one at this point. It would be, like, Mass Effect 2, like, old reliable.
Mm-hmm.
Mass Effect 2, where I've gone through the game, like, a billion zillion times, so I know what happens. Nothing at this point would really be a surprise, unless I did, like, one of the Dude Shepherd romances, because I've never like played as him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that where it's, you know, it's familiar and yeah, like I've seen everything, so I don't need to, you know, pay attention so much. I can kind of like sit back, put my feet up on my desk and like fly through the galaxy and just do whatever. So yeah, that's my answer for that one.
All right. Next we have another question from Orkchop. Bungie said that your Destiny character won't carry over to Destiny 2. They'll keep your race and look, but none of your equipment or emotes that you bought will come with. What do you think about an MMO wiping the slate clean and resetting everything when a major expansion or sequel comes out?
Ugh, man. So I don't play, like, a lot of Destiny, but I'm really not impressed by that choice that they've made, especially in regards to things like emotes or like all the cosmetic stuff that doesn't change like your stats. It doesn't change anything about your character that would get you further ahead in the game, other than like maybe having somebody recognize, oh, hey, that guy's got, you know, that helmet appearance from this thingamajig, so that means he's pretty good, like, I guess. But like not being able to carry over things like emotes and dances and stuff, especially some of those, like you had to either you spent a long time farming them to get the currency to buy them, or you'd like legit bought them with actual money. Man, like I really don't like that. Mm-hmm. I think that the cosmetic stuff should super be able to be carried over. Equipment, nah. Although I know there's some like rare weapons and stuff that maybe people would want to have carry over, but then been and kind of put in like a transmog system like WoW has done, so that you can at least have the appearance of it, but then you can't even do that because they're not letting you carry over cosmetic shit. So gosh, yeah, like,
yeah,
it makes me angry.
I only played a little bit of Destiny when it first came out, so I don't know a whole lot about the equipment or the emotes, but it seems like they should pick one way or the other. Like, it should either be an expansion, and then mm-hmm. you keep everything, and you just sort of continue on with your character, or you say, this is a sequel, this is a brand new game, and everything gets wiped clean. Like, for keeping the race and look, like, that seems like a fairly easy thing to recreate. Like, yeah. I don't really even see why they would do that. But, I mean, if it is something that you actually went out and spent money on, do they cost money? Or was it, is it, like, emotes and things?
Some of them... Like, if you wanted to just get them, you could buy, like, the currency to buy them.
Oh, okay.
Because some of the emotes and the dances especially, they cost silver. And I think you could farm silver, but you could also purchase it, I'm pretty sure. Because I'm pretty sure somebody in this apartment has purchased dances for money.
Sammy.
Yeah, that's her.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing WoW is my only MMO, and the only thing I can really compare it to is when they took away flying temporarily in, was it Pandaria?
Yeah.
Then all the mounts that you had either worked really hard to get or actually spent real money on, I mean, I guess you could still use them, but...
they wouldn't do the thing they're designed to do.
So yeah, I don't know. I think if it's an MMO, then you should just sort of add on to it.
Yeah, I think that's the problem that Bungie is having with Destiny. Like, if they want to have a Destiny 2, it should be like a completely separate game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's how you'd think of it. That's how I think of it anyway, is like Destiny 2 is a new thing, new storylines, new characters, but then like, if it's still in the same universe, I don't know. Like, it's because they've had expansions and content expansions already. Like, they've had I'm not gonna be able to remember any of them off the top of my head, but there have been
something about a Taken King.
Yeah. So that's one of them. And then they've had like at least two or three more. So they've had expansions and they've had more content. So I don't know. Like, I don't know. Are they counting on people to leave Destiny and go on to Destiny 2 so they won't have to support like the online stuff of Destiny anymore? Or I don't know. But I think not letting people bring over the stuff from their characters that's cosmetic, I think that's the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if they're going to maybe like look at player feedback and take that into account, because like the cosmetic stuff in Destiny is so cool. Like, some of those dances are like amazing. Some of them are like two-person dances, so if you get somebody like to do the dance in front of you, there's like different moves that each character will do. And like, there's cosmetic stuff from like all the like holiday events, and like armor tints and dyes and stuff, and losing, I don't know, I don't even play it that much, and I'm mad that I would lose all that stuff. So I can't even imagine it for people who have like played this for a long time, what they're thinking. But yeah, I don't know. I like, if you're gonna just like wipe the slate clean and go for like a whole new thing, then like call it a whole new thing. Don't make it another Destiny.
Yeah.
But they're counting on having their fan base come over and play their new game. So I don't know. Let the people have what they want.
Mm-hmm.
At least the cosmetic stuff. Man. Makes me so angry. Okay. Let's see. The next one is from Garrick Winter. Have you been reading any sci-fi or fantasy recently? And what are some of your favorite books?
I've read a little. I've been reading some sort of cyberpunk, which is sort of sci-fi. I read a collection of short stories called Cyberworld. I just started I guess it's sort of like an urban fantasy book called Dusk or Dark or Dawn or Day. I just started it today, and it's about a girl whose sister kills herself, and not long after, the girl herself dies, and she sort of comes back as a ghost, and she's trying to, I guess, make up for her sister's death, which she sort of blames herself for. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty good so far. I think the last sort of pure fantasy I read was Throne of the Crescent Moon by Saladin Ahmed. I read that last year, and that was really good. It's like a Middle Eastern fantasy novel. I have a problem with fantasy because I really like it, but I find that they almost always come in huge series. Like, it's not just a fantasy book. It's like part one of 12, and it's just like, I can't make that commitment. I just want one fantasy book.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, fantasy in particular is really bad with that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have not been doing a lot of reading recently, which I'm trying to remedy. I think the last fantasy book, and it's not even like pure fantasy, it's like fantasy and maybe a little bit of sci-fi, is called, what it's called, Nice Dragons Finish Last. And that one is, again, you know, like fantasy tradition. It's a series of books. I think it's three. What? Actually, there was a really, really good sci-fi one that I wrote that if you are a fan of Mass Effect at all, you will probably like this book. But it's written by Rachel Bach, and I'm pretty sure that's a nom de plume pen name. I'm pretty sure it's a pen name. But she, it's, again, it's three books. Fuck. Mm-hmm. And it's like space, so yeah, like sci-fi, and it follows a woman, which, and it gave off like super Mass Effect vibes. So yeah, that was really good. So I've got a question for listeners, because like if you have good fantasy or sci-fi recommendations that are like a book, like one single book, let us know. Because I'm interested in like reading more, but I don't want to get stuck reading like a, I don't know, 12 or 13, you know, fantasy series, because I've done that and I don't want to do another another fantasy book series that is 13 books and ends extremely disappointing.
What about the other part of the question for favorite books?
Oh, favorite books. The His Dark Materials trilogy. Those are excellent.
I really like the first one.
Yes. Yeah, the first one is probably the best one. I mean, like, I have to give an honorary mention to Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
Since so I went and I looked at my book because I was looking at some of the physical books that I still have. I got rid of a lot of them when I moved. And the Harry Potter book, the first one, is like, I opened it up and it kind of like creaks open. It's <No. laughs> like old and very well worn. But my grandmother gave it to me in like 1991, 93, something like that. Like, actually, you know what? That's wrong. I'm pretty sure it's 99, now that I'm thinking of it. So yeah, 1999.
All right.
And it's like, I don't even, it's the Philosopher's Stone. And I know, I think in America it's the Sorcerer's Stone, because they like changed a bunch of the words so that Americans would know, yeah, like when you say that. Torch, you're talking about a flashlight. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's very well worn at this point. And like, even when I got it, I like colored the crest, like the Harry Potter crest that's in the book here. And it's like,
oh yeah,
why did I do that? But like at the time I was a lot younger. So, but it's like, you know, the pages are like yellowing and stuff. I've had it for so long. So like the Harry Potter series gets a big mention from me because, yeah, they were my favorite books for a long, long, long time.
Great. And then some of my favorite books, here is where I feel stupid because I don't know how to pronounce this, and it's my favorite book. It's called The Magus, or The Magus, M-A-G-U-S.
I think Magus is correct.
Magus? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those things where, like, you never use that word in conversation, yeah. And you just read it in your head, so... It's by John Fowles, and it's about this male protagonist, Nicholas, who's kind of a dick, and he goes to this Greek island and befriends this weird, wealthy recluse, and the wealthy recluse starts him on this journey where he's questioning what is real and what isn't. The things I can compare it to are the movie The Game. It's sort of a lot like that. And then it's also seen as one of the sort of inspirations for modern alternate reality games. So I really like that book. Another favorite is Perdido Street Station, which is like a speculative fiction with the most wonderful world building I've ever seen in a book. And although that is technically a trilogy, each of the books is like in the same world, but it's with completely different characters. So It's one you can just read that one if you want.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I really love The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood, which I just read for the first time, I think, last year. It's great. It's sort of this dystopic tale about how women are treated in the future. And they're making a mini-series of it, so I'm very excited about that.
Mm-hmm. I thought of another one, mm-hmm. and I read it as, like, a kid, but it's The Phantom Toll Booth.
Oh, I love that book.
That's a really good one, too. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, a nice quick read because I looked at my copy the other day and it was, like, the text is really large.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not super short in page length, but the text is very big.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it looks like it should be much longer and take mm-hmm. you much longer to read, but it's, nope. It's deceptive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. The next question is from a Latino lawyer again. Are there any shows that you enjoy watching with a group of friends that would not be fun to watch by yourself or vice versa?
I feel like shows that would be fun to watch with people. I don't know because it would have to be something I've already seen because I have a thing where people like, if you start talking over like stuff that's happening and I want to pay attention to it and there are people talking, I'm like low-key like super mad. Oh. But like when it's stuff that I've already seen, that's okay. But like I can't even think of, actually, you know what, I would really love to watch like Supernatural with people and just like shit talk the entire time.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
That's
100, actually the 100 at this point would be really good to watch with people.
That's what I was thinking. There's not really anything that I do watch with a group of friends, like yeah, it's just sort of logistically not a thing that's probably going to happen, but
yeah,
any of those shows that I sort of hate watch, like The 100 or The Walking Dead, that would
Grey's Anatomy would be another Grey's Anatomy, really fun
yeah.
one.
That would be fun to watch with a group of friends.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the problem with, like, Southern Ontario and where people live in Southern Ontario is, like, it's big, and then Toronto is, like, this fucking beast to get around if you don't have a vehicle, and then even if you do have a vehicle, it's shit to get around, so it's hard to get people together on like nights when shows actually air.
Yeah,
but I could see like having like a rewatch party and like doing that every couple weekends or something. That'd be good, but like it'd have to be with stuff that I've already seen, because like I like to watch things on my own for the most part, like just me and Brian. So
yeah, I'd also think it would be cool to watch things that are sort of, I don't know, more interesting to discuss. Like I'd love to watch Battlestar Galactica with people or things like that. So
yeah. Next question is from Cartridge Bros, and I think that's the P1 Cartridge Bro, is that right?
Yes, that's P1.
Okay, I'm just looking at this question. This is a hard one. Oh. Except it's not that hard. If you could voice any character in video game history for any title, who would it be and why?
Well, for me, it would be the protagonist in Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. I did a Let's Play of that where I did voice the protagonist and it was a lot of fun. Also, because the protagonist doesn't have a voice, it's something that's like missing. I would not want to take on a role that already had a voice associated with it.
Yeah. Because then you would just get compared and think of that the whole time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, but like any character, like any character, like it doesn't even have to be the main one.
That's true.
I think it would be really cool to voice a character in like a game like Overwatch or Heroes of the Storm even, or League of Legends, like any kind of like ensemble cast game, I think would be really cool. Although I don't know, like, I mean, like, when I play Tracer, I basically, like, say her lines anyway, just not with an accent. But yeah, like, that would be really cool, because then you get, like, the phenomenon of people, like, making memes and shit about the lines that your character says. I think that'd be really, really fun. So a while ago, Mass Effect has done this thing. Sorry, I'm talking about Mass Effect again, but that's how it's going to be for the next month, okay? Mass Effect had a contest for a couple of their games. They did it for Dragon Age Inquisition, and they did it again for Mass Effect. And I sat down and I actually recorded lines for the Mass Effect one. I made my brother enter for the Dragon Age one.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't bother at the time, but this one, I recorded lines. I never sent them, but I recorded them. So I think it would have been cool to actually, like, follow through on that and send them, and then, like, maybe have voiced the random, like, characters that those people got to voice.
I did send in one for the Andromeda one.
Oh, nice.
Both of the winners were, like, voice actors.
Yeah. So they're just basically making you think you've got a shot. Like someone like that the character gets to interact with, like the main character gets to interact with. So like even the character, like the reporter in Mass Effect, where you get to like punch her in all three games. Like, even to just be, like, a character that somebody, like, remembers because they hate you, like, that would be okay with me, too, so.
All right. Another one from Estelia's Lair. This question is for Riley. Do you subscribe to Drama Fever? If so, do you have any shows you'd like to recommend?
I don't subscribe. However, I know a couple shows on there. That I could recommend because I've watched them.
First, sorry, what is Drama Fever?
Oh, okay. So Drama Fever is kind of like, so think of it as like Netflix, but for Korean dramas specifically.
Oh, I probably could have guessed that.
Yeah. Same kind of thing. Okay. You can watch some of them for free. You just get like ads and stuff. But yeah, so like, what's on there? So one of the first ones that I watched, Descendants of the Sun, and I mentioned this like a little while ago, but that's an excellent drama. I think Goblin is also on Drama Fever. That's also an excellent one. If you can get past feeling kind of like squicked out about the age difference between the protagonist and the secondary protagonist, because she is like a high school student and he is like a 30-year-old man. So if you can get past that, you're golden. The rest of the show is great. It's just that one bit where it's kind of weird. And then the historical drama that I was watching, Huarang, that one is going to be on Drama Fever. And I would say if you have patience and can make it through the first 15 episodes... where it's kind of slow and you make it to the end, it's worth it. I promise it's worth it.
How many episodes are there?
There are 20.
Oh, that, okay.
So you gotta make it through most of the season to get to the really, like, when the stuff finally starts happening. It takes a while. It takes a while, but it does get there. And I haven't really watched a lot more. I've heard really good things about a show called Strong Woman Do Bong-soon, but I don't know. I've never watched it, so I can't, like, she's, like, super strong and can, like, carry cars and shit. So, yeah, that's all I know about that one. But yeah, those are the ones that I've seen that I can recommend with some caution in some cases. Yeah, but, like, there's so much on there. It's ridiculous. There's almost too much. But what I would like to start watching is, like, some historical dramas instead of, like, current stuff or like silly stuff, because a lot of it is just like really goofy and silly. And I would rather watch more like historical stuff and serious dramas. And like the first one that I mentioned, The Descendants of the Sun, like I cried like a baby because it was so sad. Oh, it was so good though. Yeah, so I would say start with that one and then like move on to some of the other suggestions that I made and see if you like them or not. But yeah, that's it for Drama Fever, because I haven't watched any more than that. But if there's people listening and you have a recommendation for me, let me know, because I am currently not watching any Korean dramas.
Mm.
Yeah. And I would like to watch some more. Okay. Second last question is also from Estelia's Lair. With all the news lately about male Let's Players being unredeemable asshats, can you suggest a few good female Let's Players? I don't actually watch a lot of Let's Plays.
Yeah, I don't watch a ton either, but I know of a couple who I have watched. I mostly watch their like non-Let's Play videos, but one is Geek Etiquette. She does Let's Plays and she has a lovely accent, and I think she's actually doing a Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines one. Ooh. Right now, along with a few other games. Another one is Rabbit Plays Games, and she does nice little short Let's Play episodes. So Rabbit Plays Games mostly focuses on retro Let's Plays. So right now she's doing Legend of Legaia, and before that she did Grandia 2. So I really like her. I watch her sort of update videos and her review videos when she does those. And then another channel, which I actually haven't watched any of these Let's Plays, but there's this channel called Snarled, which I really like, and there's a series called Rad Gaming with Beth and Rachel. And though I haven't actually seen the Let's Plays, I really like Beth when she does videos, and I really like Rachel when she does videos, so I'm gonna go ahead and assume that their Let's Plays are good as well.
It's gotta be.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotta be. Unfortunately, I don't know female Let's Players. I can suggest one dude Let's Player, and that's my favorite Twitch person ever, Adam Coble.
Not an unredeemable asshole.
No, he's okay, you know? He's pretty good. Yeah, like, and he does a lot of his Let's Play stuff. He'll do it on Twitch and then, like, upload afterwards to YouTube. And his community is actually not, you know, like, typical what you think of when you think of Twitch channels being garbage comment sections. His community is actually really great, and it's like I would say a pretty safe space for anybody who identifies as LGBT, because he himself is queer, so he cultivates a really good and safe atmosphere. And he talks about all sorts of different stuff when he goes through his Let's Plays. So if you are not opposed to watching a dude play video games, then he's the one that I can recommend with more confidence.
All right. And the last question is from Serene Wow. How has your experience hosting a podcast been so far? What do you like about it?
It's been good. We haven't had like any super negative experiences.
No.
Which I like. That's good, because hearing like some of the other women podcasters, it sounds like they have gone through kind of some garbage. So we haven't got any of that. I really like learning about like the editing process and doing that. I really like editing it, the podcast itself. and having a bunch of different people on who have like different experiences and different, maybe not like super different opinions from us, but at least different ways to talk about things, has been really interesting. I feel like, you know, having these people on has, I don't know, it's like kind of self-serving, but I feel like a better person. having different people on and hearing things from different perspectives. So, yeah, I don't know. It's the only part of it that I have difficulty with is like thinking of guests to invite on and then like following through with the inviting them on. yeah. But other than that, I don't know. I like it. It's going good, I think. Yeah. We're getting up to, what, a year
now? Yeah, we're almost a year next month.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, the experience for me as well has been good. Almost completely positive. I think the only shit I've gotten is on my YouTube channel. Someone was like, I listened to your podcast and found out you're a feminist, so I mind subscribing. Like, oh. Okay, bye.
you but couldn't other, tell that from, like, your videos?
My videos? No, apparently it's hard to tell.
Aye.
So, yeah, it's been really good. I like that it gives me an outlet to, like, actually talk about what I think about games or shows or whatever, rather than just think about it or sort of tweet it out into the void. Also, that it gives me a chance to talk to new people. One of the things I think I like best about having a podcast is that there's, you know, people on Twitter or whatever in games who you sort of interact with a little bit, but having a podcast like gives you an outlet to say like, hey, why don't you come have a conversation about this on our podcast, which is like something you wouldn't say if you didn't have a podcast. Hey, do you want to just come talk to me for an hour? Just
yeah.
So yeah, I like that. It's let me sort of meet, air quotes, new people and get new perspectives on things. All right, that is all for our questions. Thank you again to everyone who sent questions in.
Yes.
Riley, where can people contact you if they want to?
You can find me on Twitter at Kaleri. It's K-A-L-E-R-I with an underscore.
And you can find me on Twitter at Jasila underscore or on YouTube where the channel is called Cannot Be Tamed. And if you have any feedback, questions, people, or topic you'd like to hear on future episodes of the show, you can reach out at mediamavenscast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter @_mediamavens. We also have a forum all to ourselves on the Cartridge Club forums. That's cartridgeclub.org, where you can ask questions or discuss episodes of the show. And if you like the show, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Yay!
All right. That is my boyfriend swearing.